This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scale. I'm pleased to have Derek with us as a guest this week. Derek, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, please?
Yeah, I'm Derek Ray. I'm the founder and CEO of Demand Inc. We've helped hundreds of startups top of funnel last 7 years, driven over $7 billion in pipeline, many exits, over 45 funding events. So been working in SaaS for 2 decades and love the top of funnel trench that we call sales development.
Fantastic. And what did you do in the past that led you to this? What kind of idea, what kind of, this was the aha moment or something that, hey, this is really, I have to do it. This is my mission now.
Yeah. So prior to starting Demand, I led go-to-market efforts at a company called Shape Security, Kleiner Perkins backed security company. Had a really good run there. The company ended up selling for $1 billion. So I can say I took unicorn to market. But prior to that, I was a multi-founder. Always led top of funnel efforts, and I love the challenge of top of funnel, the variables, the research, the data challenges, the storytelling, especially. But I knew that a life in sales development was something that I'd be pretty happy doing, just given the art and the science that goes into it. So I created Demand with the idea that we'd create a best in class sales development platform. And fast forward 7 years later, with $7 billion in pipeline, booked for our clients, and hundreds of great companies, it's definitely come to fruition.
Okay, fantastic. Now, one of the topics that when we discussed earlier, I heard from you as a kind of the main topic that you're interested in and you have been, focused on it, you have experience about it. It's really about go-to-market strategy and really establishing the sales and everything for SaaS companies. What does make it different for SaaS versus non-SaaS when we are talking about, for example, sales organization? And then I would go and talk about the go-to-market strategy part of it too.
Yeah, so for sales organizations, SaaS, non-SaaS, there's actually a lot in common, and it's more stage specific, like early stage, early stage, seed stage, idea stage, on go-to-market that you really want to break down, what stage is the company in. Specifically SaaS, it really depends on who your buyers are, right? It's really the chooser and the user of the product. And there's some, there's different variations of go-to-market strategies you might deploy, depending on how much your product costs, who's going to use it, who's going to choose to buy it. But I would say more importantly, the stage of seed stage to Series A, to B, to later on, when you bring in the big guns. I think that's more common. I think that's a better way to look at things, because early on, you're looking at product market fit, you're looking at ICP analysis. And for our companies that we're working with that are early stage, minimal resources, they probably don't have an internal sales team yet. Maybe they're doing founder-led sales. And there's a lot of, metrics that we're looking for there. There's a lot of, just getting, the meeting is the hardest part. And that will remain true for the entire, the company, even when they become, hopefully a unicorn, like a lot of our seed stage companies have, or at least we've had the privilege of working on. But I think when you start breaking down go-to-market in the different, stages of a company, that's where the variables and what we do differently is really differentiated.
And what you mentioned top of the funnel, but from that perspective, doesn't matter if you're SaaS or not SaaS, it's still you need to, you know, bring some context to the funnel and build your kind of, you know, sales pipeline and everything. As you said, this is more about the stage of the company, really how to do it. So traditionally, you know, when you go back to some years ago, email marketing was very much the tool that any company used in order to send emails and then bring people to the website and those kind of things. Do you see that's changing? Do you see that the email marketing and bringing people from email is the same as it used to be? Is it the same as SaaS, as non-SaaS companies? Or you have seen, of course, you know, some major shifts there or some new techniques, tactics that need to be applied?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's definitely changed a ton. I still believe more now than ever that it is the number one channel for SaaS companies mm-hmm. to accelerate revenue, top of funnel growth by far, mm-hmm. right? Phone cold calling does not scale, right? Even with power dialers, it never scales. Email where you can do one to many. If you can do that well, if you can do it with personalization, if you have AI supporting you, which we see now, the differentiation and also the techniques and tactics that go into good top of funnel sales development using the email. If you have that that capability now, you can do amazing things because there's so much noise out there. Going into fall of 2023, analyzing every single company that closed Series A, 70% of them didn't have their domains configured correctly to send cold email at scale. Right. And so how to send cold email is for whatever reason, and I think it's part of the barrier to enter is so low. It's kind of like shooting a basketball. It costs about $10 to get an email account, about $10 to get a basketball. People, you know, get an email cart account, start sending email. And then I'll tell you the one thing that doesn't happen is NBA players don't lose sleep at night when we buy basketballs and start shooting our first day, right? And same is true in email. The continuum of knowing how to send good email seems like it's been lost, and it's been lost for a while. And so we have an entire generation of sales folks that never learned how to write personalized one-off emails, right? Mm. So we've been, you know, doing this mail merge, spray and pray, at least a lot of people have for a very long period of time. And the art and science of what goes into a good email and good communication seems like it's completely left the building. So if you know how to send cold email, now's a fantastic time. Now, in terms of why emails change, I think there's been a proliferation on spamming tools, techniques, databases. You know, contact data became cheaper. And it was easier to send, you know, tons of email. And so people just, you know, threw whatever at the wall to see what stuck. And that's changing now. You know, Google is changing it in terms of deliverability and spam. You know, people that do the spray and pray, or they do a lot of those tactics that probably worked, you know, 5 years ago, they don't work now. And so you really have to be a much more strategic communicator with email if you want to, one, reach the inbox, and two, you know, grow your business. And so I think it's an exciting time for email, the most exciting time. But I also think it's probably the most understood time in terms of how to send cold email.
So back to go-to-market strategy that you have passion for, and you have worked with some companies on that. Based on what I hear from you, it's like still today, email marketing would be a big part of that go-to-market strategy from your perspective. You're including that as one piece of the puzzle when you are really architecting it. What else you would do differently today that maybe has changed or has evolved with regard to the SaaS business on the go-to-market strategy?
Yeah, and it depends. You know, we love phone, we love LinkedIn, especially post connect, like after you've spoken with someone or you have some level of an engagement. So triggering another, you know, channel, I think is a best practice. So if you're using cold email and you're getting engagement from a specific type of cadence or message or person, you know, triggering another form of follow-up works great. Obviously, after you've met with a person, it's incredibly important to follow them in a human way. So We like SMS, we like phone, we like LinkedIn, just to have that top mind awareness, conversation, relationship development. But I think the tip of the spear being cold email that we use, we see that as by far the most scalable. LinkedIn has volumetric limitations, phone has volumetric limitations. It's incredibly costly to do phone at scale. And email, as that, if you prioritize that as the number one channel and you do it well, you don't have to have like a one size fits all, all in on email. You can use other channels as well, but, I'd say diversity in your sales, development, plan is a good idea. But I would say the one must have is being able to do email well, if you're a B2B SaaS company.
All of this formula we are talking about, of course, I think this is applying to B2B, right? So most of the probably experience we are talking about, or from your perspective, B2C shares the majority of these two, or we are mainly talking about B2B when we are talking about these topics?
Yeah, mainly B2B. In B2C, there's a lot of regulatory differences when it comes to a GTM strategy. You typically see product-led growth. You can see product-led growth in B2B too, but B2C is a bit different, mainly because of the regulatory nature of, reaching out to people on their, personal emails or cell phones versus business.
Sure. And how do you see AI affecting these kind of, email marketing, go-to-market strategy for SaaS and, filling the top of the funnel?
Yeah, it's in every aspect of it. AI is making a huge impact and difference in copywriting. And we see the over-engineered AI emails now where, there's 15 referenceable things, in the email, which is way too much. And there's there's a law of diminishing returns on personalization when it becomes impersonal, put it that way. But so on the copy side, we definitely see AI coming in. You can see it in your inbox every day. Some of it's okay. There's definitely a good, bad, and ugly. And I think we're still seeing a lot of ugly and bad, but optimistic we'll get to good. And I say we, I would argue that we have great messaging right now using AI, and it's role-based, and it's some of the things we see from like Sam Sales, who's a former LinkedIn sales. She has this concept called Show Me How You Know Me. And it's like, using, personalized hooks of things you see on their LinkedIn to reach out to you, to relate to, to be relatable in a message. So we see AI in messaging. We see AI in outreach, people using AI to automate, their cadences and sequences for outreach. We see AI in research. I think the biggest thing, the most exciting thing if you're a salesperson is, or even if you're in sales development, a lot of the work that we've been doing for years, and this goes all the way back to, if you think about a phone book, having a human work a phone book was never a great idea. Machines are much better at knowing who to contact, when to contact, why to contact, and who you haven't contacted. And there's this theory, the Dunbar theory, of how many relationships humans can maintain or have in all of our lives. So our family, our loved ones, our friends, our business colleagues, et cetera. The relationships we can actually maintain is really low. I want to say it's like 150 is the theory. Maybe it's 125 relationships in all of our life. So when you apply that to salespeople and they're trying to work at 10,000 contact total addressable market, we know that cognitively humans are going to come up way short. And we have CRMs to help us, but they're asynchronous and they don't tell us when someone has changed jobs. They don't tell us when or what contacts we're missing. So I think the most exciting part about AI right now in sales and specifically SaaS sales is AI to tell us where our gaps are, who should we be talking to? And I think the ultimate vision for the product that we're launching called Lasso is to basically be a phone book that tells you who to contact and what to say, right? Because that's what no one has ever enjoyed, like cleaning a list or running their thumb through a phone book until it turns blue. And so I think AI to do the utility work on the data side is really exciting for all salespeople, all revenue leaders.
You mentioned this lots of AI. Can you explain a little bit about it? How does it work? What is different? What's the difference between this technology and maybe some other similar technologies, what is the main application for it?
Yeah, so Lasso is a 100% additive solution for finding contacts that are verified in real time. So similar to its namesake, Western culture, throwing a lasso, right? You're going to throw a lasso to essentially get exactly what you want. And in this case, for SaaS sellers or revenue leaders, it's contacts that match your ICP. And so what Lasso does is uses metadata from the internet. So you can throw Lasso out and say, if I want to find, you know, this title at this type of company, you throw Lasso out, it validates it in real time, meaning that your bounce, the verification is going to be, or the bounce rate is going to be close to, the, we'll say 1%, should be between 0 and 1. Because you just did this programmatic exercise, similar to like an API call, where you ask Lasso to go get exactly what you want right now, then you're going to presumably engage it. Whereas historically speaking, when you look at databases, you know, digitally, you know, they were in parity with their, you know, analog counterpart, mm-hmm. you know, because the phone book just became digital. It's still paid. You have pages you scroll through to find people. Maybe there's some better search functionality, but they never were real time, right? So even, you know, the best databases out there, you still get a significant bounce, you know, because the data is expiring on a daily basis, similar to perishable goods. And so if you treat data or contact data similar to the way you would, you know, your vegetable aisle in the grocery store, you know, you'd much rather have what is fresh and picked today than, you know, months or years ago in your contact data. And I think the biggest thing is with Lasso, we built it so you can exclude what you already know, counts and contacts, focus on net new. So it's a gap analysis every single time you throw a Lasso. It's 100% additive, right? So you're always finding net new. And for anyone that's a seller or has managed sales teams, everyone knows that the hardest, especially on a mature team, the biggest challenge is finding net new, right? And no matter how many data sets you're subscribed to, they don't talk to each other, right? So it's not only like a problem like the phone book had, but your organization probably has 3 phone books and they're not communicating to each other. And so when you can exclude what's already in your CRM, focus on net new, throw out a lasso to find it, every sales team that we've shown it to has fallen out of their chair with excitement to use it.
So in this particular case, is it fair to say Lasso is working mainly with CRM platforms, a particular CRM platform, or is neutral? It works with essentially, doesn't matter, any contact list that you may feed.
Yeah, so it's agnostic to CRM platform. You can feed Lasso a CSV of account list or accounts or just by domain, and it can go find contacts at the domain. So pretty much it'll work with any CRM. And then it has a CSV export, so you can plug that back into CRM too. So it works with pretty much everything. And I would say that most of the usage so far has been complementary to other tools. And even if it's on the data contact data side, it's complementary to other contact data sets because you have the ability to exclude, you know, what you already have and focus on net new.
Is it something that you envision Lasso being used as an independent technology, or is it something that you guys are positioning yourself to provide services, or it will be proprietary technology or service through only your firm? How do you see it?
Yeah, so we built the technology over 2 years ago. We deployed it internally, so we've been using it to win meetings and find contacts, and so we have, you know, tremendous confidence in terms of its abilities. But it's a standalone tool, so it's going to be self-service. You can if you go to lasso.ai, you can see it now. If you book a demo and, you know, sign up to or to see what it looks like, let them know that you attended this podcast and we'll give them some bonus credits. But it's going to be a self-service tool that teams can use. It plays nicely, so you can run it, you know, agnostic, you know, on its own as your contact solution. It could also be complementary to any other contact database out there. It can be complementary to your CRM. Pretty much any, you know, any B2B use case where the two objects are accounts and contacts, Lasso can play and support.
Okay, great. Now, from your perspective, you have been working with this company or developing these technologies. Now you see AI coming and developing that. How do you see, for example, the way it works now for you guys it's moving forward, what would you see as the next step moving forward? What is the next challenge, the next step?
Well, 2 years from now, sales development as we know it, sales prospecting for SaaS companies will have completely changed, completely. And what where the puck is headed is where we aren't going to need to have humans scrolling through endless pages of profiles, and you know, and you, and if you walk through any bullpen of any sales team in, you know, in SaaS, and you look at their screens, what their monitors are doing, those the monitors 2 years from now will not be sitting on LinkedIn pages. You know, they won't be having humans doing work that can be done much better and faster and more accurately than a machine can, right? So the nature at which our industry is changing, and by industry I mean SaaS, you know, selling really, in 2 years from now, we're going to have an entirely different makeup of SDRs, of BDRs. Their role have completely changed. I also think sales development, you know, is becoming and is right now more important than marketing. And if you look at it's really an AI sales development role that I'm talking about. But when you look at, you know, institutional, you know, collegiate courses, what you can study out there, our entire world is shifting as we speak. And we think about prompt engineering, and you think about, you know, utilizing machines to be more efficient as humans. You know, the top of funnel, you know, the top of every sales funnel for SaaS companies is about to drastically change. It already is. I mean, this is we're in mid transition right now, and we see it in every product, in every, you know, sales funnel. It's either you have it, you know, or you're developing it, or you're going to be left behind, because what we can do with machines and AI is so much more efficient than what we've ever been able to do, you know, in SaaS, you know, since we started emailing.
So if I wanted to start a SaaS company and I wanted to have some SDR, BDR team helping me, some team members over there, it is a better time now compared to 5 years ago, because I can gain more productivity based on these automations and AI. But if I am that person who's managing the SR team, or I'm one of the SR team members, from your perspective, what should I do to be more successful, be the SDR of the next 5 years, not the SDR that used to be a good SDR, but now it may not be that productive or relevant anymore?
Yeah, there's fundamental blocking and tackling that needs to be done for sales development, similar to any sport, you know, playing chess, you know, the 10,000 hour rule. You want to start from the basics, and that's writing a cold email to a human being and sounding human, right? And if you're looking to build a sales development team and you want to, you know, you eventually want it to be this AI enabled or AI, you know, human in the loop type of sales development team, you want to make sure that the team has that fundamental capability of being able to open an email and write a cold email to a person and know how to communicate effectively, right? And so once you start doing that and it becomes more repetitious and you develop like the muscle memory, it's like doing push-ups or anything else, and you start to add scale to that, the early teachings from those fundamental tactics is something that we like to refer to as grouping. Because like if you're going to write, say, 100 cold emails to 100 people, and you do them one at a time, it's going to take you a long time. But when you look at that group of 100 people, you might realize that, you know, 15 of those are CMOs. So why don't I craft the message for one CMO that I can repeat and makes a few subtle changes, you know, for the next CMO, and I'll be more efficient and more productive in terms of driving more engagement because of this, you know, targeted or segmented approach. And then as you start to develop that, you know, primary skill, writing a cold email that piques interest, it's not salesy, it's lands in their inbox, they reply to it, it's engaging. And you start to add scale and starting to, you know, build for AI, you're going to reach a point in time when it's like, you know, maybe with three people, you know, we could support a 100-person sales team. And so what's happened in the last 5 years is, you know, you used to have these massive BDR, SDR teams supporting AEs, supporting directors, and the funnel is now switched. You're going to be able to have a less is more, and that SDR is going to become more strategic, right? Because they can scale, they can be more efficient, but they still have to have those, that core capability of knowing how to communicate in a personalized way at scale. And so, you know, right now, if you're a SaaS founder listening to this and you're wondering, how can I be effective or even most effective in top of funnel, it's really about being, you know, human at scale. And also, it's super important to look at how we communicate as natural humans, like how you text your friends, how you communicate to your loved ones versus when you sit down and write a cold email. A lot of times people go back to how they're trained, you know, oh, I'm going to have an introductory paragraph, three supportive and a conclusion or something. And those days are gone. People are busy. They, you know, they don't read, they scan. And so understanding the variables that are stacked against you is super important in anything. And now more than ever, it's about sounding human or being human at scale. And it's kind of interesting to say that because it's paradoxical that you need machines to do that, right? At least to help us do it well. But that's absolutely what it is that if you can, you know, have a reason for outreach and you say why you, why now, and it's personalized to them and to their role, who they are in the company, you know, that's difficult to do, but you're gonna need a lot of machines to help you to do it. But I don't know if that answers your question. I think I went a little bit around.
That was good. I mean, you looked at it from different aspects. That was great. But overall, what I understood was the core part stays the same as it was before. But there are so many things that now you can do in order to accelerate it, to doing more. And if you do it the right thing, probably SDR will be empowered. And it's more important in the future, not less. From your perspective, SDR role in a SaaS company is going to stay, is not going away, is going to be even more important, not less important. It's just a matter of, you know, you need to learn it in the new way. And if you wanted to do it in the old-fashioned way, you may not get the productivity that your competitors may get.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of people that think that, you know, sales development or SDRs are going away. And I really see them more similar to data scientists, right? And the same thing was said when machine learning came along. Oh, well, machine learning is going to put data scientists out of business. Mm-hmm. And never before has it been more valuable to be a data scientist, right? And so the human in the loop in sales at the top of the funnel, I think it's going to go from the, you know, right now it's, you know, top of the funnel, bottom of the food chain, or at least it has been from a bottom of the org chart. You know, it's been an entry-level role. It's a dial for dollars. You bring in someone, you know, and give them a list of numbers to dial and see if they're, you know, successful. I think that's changing drastically in the role, you know, the value of it. And it's because of the complexities that go into the role. And I think that SaaS companies are now just realizing how many variables go into it and how complex it is and how difficult it is to be successful. Top of funnel, you know, outbound sales development. And so I do believe the role of the SDR and the value of it. It's not going to be a, you know, a job that's an entry level, you know, path to something else. And instead, it's going to be a career.
Okay. So Derek, I would like to also ask you if you have any book or some books personally you liked it or professionally you read it and you so
I have it sitting right next to me. Dan Martell, Buy Back Your Time. So if you're a founder and you're an operator and you're trying to reclaim your freedom, it's a fantastic book. And, you know, I've been bootstrapped, you know, executing for 7 years, over 100 people, 6 continents. And this is one of those books that has changed the way my perspective on how to operate the business, specifically around delegating and focusing on the things that make you happy that you like to work on and also drive the most value for the company. And it's a fantastic book. It has all kinds of great examples in it in terms of visceral examples of how to schedule your calendar, some matrix in terms of prioritize, how to quadrants to tell you where to hire versus where to delegate. I love the book. It's written for founders so that they don't burn out. And so, it's a SaaS founder book too, and software developer wrote it. So it's a great book. I love it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. It was great. And I'm so glad we connected and we had you on the show. Thanks again for joining us.
Likewise, Armon. It was a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.